Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, a podcast that aims to address divorce, separation, and co-parenting here in the UK, countering the often sensationalist way it's portrayed in the media, challenging the status quo, and driving for reform. On each episode, I'm joined by experts to discuss divorce, separation, and co-parenting from different angles and to give their opinions and to debate them. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor and divorce coach, co-founder of Amicable, the divorce services company, and host of this divorce podcast. My guest today is Helen Lederer. Helen is a comedian, writer, and actress who emerged as part of the alternative comedy boom at the beginning of the 1980s. She established a stand-up act at the Comedy Store in London and then won parts in episodes of The Young Ones, which had been written by her Comedy Store contemporaries Ben Elton and Rick Mayall. Among her television credits are the BBC Two sketch series Naked Video and BBC One's Absolutely Fabulous. Helen has been a constant TV presence, appearing in a myriad of comedy and panel shows as well as the theatre, taking a role in The Vagina Monologues and Calendar Girls. More recently, Helen launched a new literary prize for comic fiction written by women. Helen is twice married and once divorced and has a daughter from her first marriage. Welcome, Helen.
Hello.
It's lovely to see you, Helen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's an opportunity to delve into the recess of my memory of obviously what wasn't the happiest time in my life, but it was, I think 25 years ago, longer. So a sort of a lifetime, an adult's worth of history, but nevertheless, a good thing to reflect on, I think.
Well, yes. I mean, the people that listen to the podcast are interested in people's personal experience of divorce. And so the fact that yours is one from a while ago rather than one that's quite so raw in itself is interest. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your personal story. You fell in love, you got pregnant, you got married, all in a very short space of time. What then happened? What sort of divorce did you have? Was it amicable or was it acrimonious?
Yes. I was thinking about this because, you know, when one tries to explain it, it sounds quite glib, you know, doesn't it, that it all happened very quickly. And clearly most divorces are not the happiest things. And then I think even Prince Charles said, you know, you don't sort of set out to get divorced. So there's a little bit of a kind of retrospective there. Go, when you make the decision to get married, mostly people want that to happen above all else. You know, it is a very sort of fervent, tends to be a fervent wish and a goal. So when that doesn't continue, it is difficult, but probably difficult for both parties. You know, the sad thing is that in my case, you know, both of us, my daughter's father and me, you know, we'd been around a lot. I don't think our track record in long-term relationships was particularly vivid. And so you can look back and go, you know, if I knew what I knew now, then one would have done that, let's sit and talk about it more. But I think when you are new to thinking it's a failure, there's a lot of panic. So yeah. I think experience in relationships is really handy to make a divorce feel not normal, but okay. You know, it's okay for human beings to have tried and then go, you know what, we will be improved by being separate.
Were you quite young when you got divorced then, Helen?
Well, when I told my mother that I was pregnant, I said to her, you're going to have to sit down, because you always tell people to sit down when there's a shock. I think she'd given up on me. But you see, I was 34 when I got pregnant, and I'd been going out with Roger for, I think, about 8 months before that. And it was a definite desire for us both to have a child. So that was quick. Then the marriage happened when I was, I think, 6 months pregnant. And then he left when she was one. So I suppose when you sort of weigh all the maths up, it was quite a rapid experience of meeting, falling in love, whatever that means, as the late Princess Di would say, and going through having one's first child and then becoming a single parent effectively. So yeah, it was quite a condensed, you know. So, and in fact, because I'm writing my memoir at the moment, but mostly about comedy, I do remember that time as being obviously very sad, but it's the two adults who create that situation together. And I really think that that's something, I'm sure in your work, it's not just one person being the lever and one people being the other person being a victim of that lever.
No, there's always a complex emotional interplay, isn't there, when a breakup happens. And sometimes, I think we were talking to Lucy Fry in another episode, and she was saying that sometimes you're not just breaking up in the moment, but you're bringing some other baggage from previous breakups into that situation. So there's a whole mass of stuff going on. And I guess for you, given the huge life changes you'd been through then, having just had a baby and become parents, it must have been even more complicated trying to sort through how you navigate new parenthood and then new parenthood alone.
That's right. And I think, again, I think the panic of going, oh, this isn't what it was, I thought it was going to be, you know, the rabbit in headlights is not helpful, because, you know, maybe that those two people just could never have done it. You know, even if, you know, I mean, maybe it just wasn't to be. But the one thing I learned from my best school friend at the time, oh, still my best friend, she gave me such a gift by making sure that Hannah was always part of the relationship with Roger, because it's illogical to use the child in any way against the other parent. Mm. But there is something, because you're angry and protective and hurt, that's so wrong. But I was helped by somebody else. So I think, again, when you look back at when you're hurting, even though, you know, we are all responsible for why it goes wrong, it's not one person. I really know that. You're still hurting. Both of you are hurting. But the child has to be with both parents. And I, as I say, I'm really grateful for that huge nudge at a critical time.
It sounds like you had some fantastic support in your friend then, if she was able to help you see the importance of that relationship with Roger for your child.
Yes, because it's illogical to try and deny somebody else something just because you might feel that you yourself are being denied the dream life. It does challenge your personality it's a very challenging time, actually, just looking back. And I remember at the time when I was sort of in a state of this wasn't what I wanted, that I wanted to aim for neutrality. That was my goal. Yeah. I just thought, I don't want to love. I don't want to hate. I just don't want to have to feel raw. And maybe that's another fix, because nobody is ever neutral either. Because relationships are ongoing and they evolve. And we got, you know, we're in each other's lives. But then
you're in each other's lives, aren't you, when you've got a child? So I think if you can, as you say, at the point of breaking up, realize, it's almost realizing that, isn't it? And knowing that you've got to have some relationship. So if you can make it as, even if at the beginning it's a little bit forced, but if you can make it as neutral as possible, just to allow the possibility for that to grow and develop over time, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be perfect at the start, does it? And I wonder, do you think your co-parenting relationship has grown over the years?
Yes. But then you can sort of turn it on its head and go, well, if you get on that well, why did you get divorced? It's that, and that can be confusing as well. I remember when Hannah was really young, she wanted us both to go to the Pizza Express together, and we both did. But it's just also having to understand the kind of individual characters you are as well. And, you know, you can aim for sort of textbook perfection, or even, you know, close, better than bad, but you are also the people you are, and you have to accommodate the fact that that person is going to have those needs, this person's going to have those needs, and people get together for a reason. And I think it is important to separate with forgiveness and, you know, some affection for that, for the personality, but equally, you're not going backwards. Each person has to go forward and make new relationships, and or indeed, you know, have the single life. You know,
it's really interesting listening to you, because you're somebody who for whom the divorce is quite a way in the past, and you were talking before about, you know, writing a memoir. Do you think people really learn from past mistakes Or do you think we just make them in slightly different ways as we go through our lives?
Well, it'd be interesting to know what we think is a mistake, because sometimes it's quite good just to jump in and connect with someone with very few expectations. That's a reminder that you're alive, that you have feelings, that you, even if it's physical, there's a value. So, you know, what are all our ultimate formulas of the best ideal situation? You know, a good companionship that you tend to get when you're older is not what you want when you're younger. Yeah, you know, I think relationships come in very different shapes and sizes. And I mean, I would like to think, I mean, I'm married, I say currently married, which is just stupidly ironic, stupid way of showing off about it, as if I'm that interesting. But, you know, I've been married for 20 years and that relationship has evolved from when we first met. When we first met, neither of us could eat because we were so in love. Can you imagine? Not, that is the acid test. And we couldn't eat. Well, I couldn't. Didn't last for long, the not eating. But I think it's wonderful to have the opportunity to have that in a lifetime. But you have to be able to, whether being on your own or get off with someone, that's cheering. All sorts of things are cheering, aren't they? They come in different shapes and sizes, as I say.
Well, absolutely. Your relationships don't have to be the same, of course.
No.
Of course. Do you think then that there are, we have to get better as a society then at sliding in and out of relationships? So all relationships have a value. We have multiple relationships, but we seem to make quite a drama out of ending them. And there seems to be a lot of ill-informed kind of stuff out there about how you end a relationship decently and, you know, how you go your separate ways without having to take down everybody with you. So,
yeah.
Do you think there's a gap here in us as a society in terms of what we know about breaking up well?
It's very good to have an ideal to work towards. It's very good not to panic. It's very good to have conversations where you feel all right about being a human being who, in a relationship that didn't last, whatever that, I mean, 1 in 3, you would know more than me, tend not to last. So it's inevitable, or largely inevitable, that a lot of relationships won't stay married. So it is part of life. It's not a horror or an ideal. It's just, you know, like doing the shopping, that the chances are that that will happen either to us or people we know. So it's a fact of life. Interestingly, I was thinking about this. My daughter has just broken up with someone and I'm full of admiration as to how she's dealing with it. But I think she went through the pain of the breakup before, and then very, because the writing was on the wall, and very bravely, this is an ideal way to do it, very bravely, she initiated the conversation, because sometimes the other one is too frightened to do it and in denial and is just being cross because they just don't know how to break up. And she enabled it because, as the young people say, her truth knew that she had to do that. And it's really strange. So she had the pain before, and now being newly single is all right. So that's quite an interesting process. I think, I don't think I had that kind of self-awareness when I was in my late 20s, early 30s. I think I just kind of ricocheted from person to person and did my work and just wanted people to like me a lot. Do you know what I mean? I honestly don't think I knew what it took. And then even if you do try and be mature and emotionally available and talk about it, the other person may not have the same language. So, you know, that's pretty useless as well, because you can do it to yourself, but you're still subject to another person making you feel less than good.
Yeah, a brick wall sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. But I think from what you're saying, it does sound like more people are getting the language and the understanding of, you know, relationships and being able to talk more openly about them, not just the breaking up bits, but the good bits too. And I think there's more people able to express what they want out of a relationship. And because we don't have the same kind of economic constraints, we're not forced to stay in relationships for economic or other reasons these days. So
I think it's interesting that people do still want to get married actively as older people. And then I was thinking, so there are other reasons, like, you know, we live longer. Maybe if you're married, then the other person then has a power of attorney to, God forbid, if you get ill. You know, there's kind of economic / caring reasons to get married. But for me, you see, having been married twice, I was thinking, well, if I end up on my own, then would I kind of cleave to getting married again? But it's interesting. I think it's, especially with COVID and everything, it is nicer and easier to be with someone else.
With all the imperfections. Time, weren't you, after your divorce?
I could not get a boyfriend.
We went to love no money, he said.
I could not get a boyfriend. I couldn't get a boyfriend, but I had a child, you know, a toddler. And then, you know, I did have two boyfriends in 10 years, but it's a weird one, as I'm sure any person who's been in those shoes will. It changes. It changes everything, because you then, the person you're with has to accommodate another element. So we go back to this maybe fictitious ideal of two single people not having children meeting in order that they might then possibly, if they want to, have children and so forth. But what happens when that perfection doesn't either ever happen, or it happens and then it fragments? So, and then you don't want dodgy boyfriends.
The complexities of dating with a small child are huge, aren't they? It must have been an incredibly difficult time, and just the costs of babysitting and trying to split your time. It must have been really fraught.
Or is this fair to say? I don't know the answer, but you do sort of feel that when it's a cliche, but then sometimes those are helpful to illustrate things, that, you know, the man in the playground with the kid, single male father, will get pats on back, and woman on and single parent is go, oh yeah, you know, less intrigue all round, because it's more, one is at home more of the time, generally speaking. I know that things have changed. Honestly, things have changed so much from when I was there. Do you know, I think it's very painful, but if we know, I think we do know a bit more, and I still think it's worth throwing your cap in the ring and doing your best and seeing if a relationship can't be glorious in some way. I still think it's worth having a go. I'm not put off. I wasn't put off.
Me neither. No, I've been twice and I'm still not put off. Ever hopeful. I like to think.
Ever hopeful in all things. Yeah. Because the thing is, if you're still alive, as we are, there are some things that are more fun to do with someone else, and there are some things where you need your independence and separateness. It's just that we were very separate.
I've heard you say in the past as well that you felt like, you know, not being able to make the marriage last was a failure, and I wonder why we still persist with this narrative that for all sorts of reasons a marriage doesn't work out, but somehow we failed. What keeps us going back to that same language and narrative?
I think it comes back to what we were saying at the beginning, which is like you set out to do something. You know, it takes a lot to choose someone or the person to choose you at roughly the same time. You know, it's a big thing. And after, you know, the day before you're married, the day after you're married, is you are in a different state, whether it's legal or not. So for that to go away is a failure, because you've failed at your goal. And I do remember my mother, who was so brilliant and not like judgmental. I think the only thing I heard to say, thinking about Hannah, was, it's a shame. So that was like an older person's view from the point of view of the child.
Yeah.
Because in those days, more people got divorced less, didn't they? And you can argue that there is stability in the kind of nuclear construct. You can argue that provides it. But then I had stability and ended up pretty crazy, you know, doing risky things and not being that normal, whatever that means. So there isn't evidence necessarily, is there, that a nuclear family produces, in quotes, a normal, stable offspring? Because we're still personalities, aren't we?
Yeah, I think there's a difference between people who keep a relationship that's clearly failing together for the sake of the children and, you know, a healthy relationship. I think if you've got a healthy relationship and there are two parents, it's better for children. But if that's not possible, then there are still things you can do to mitigate risks. And there are lots of things you can do as a couple that increase the risks. So an unhappy relationship, there's arguments that aren't resolved, or there's, you know, poor behavior, or there's, you know, role modeling. Unhappiness in relationships is not a great look for your kids, is it? You know,
as a parent, makes me depressed.
Exactly. As a parent, you don't want to be teaching your kids that you just have to settle and get on with it. And if you're unhappy, you just suck it up. We all say to our kids that you can go out and do what you want, be who you want.
Yeah.
Put effort in, you've got to try, it's hard work. So modeling that level of dissatisfaction feels really uncomfortable. So I think
absolutely,
it's not about it just being one or two parents. It's the quality of that relationship and what you can provide. And I also think it's about bringing in other people. They say it takes a community to raise a child. And if you end up as a single parent, it's about the influences you can bring to your child as a consequence, isn't it? Your friends, your family.
We all aim high. We all want to do one thing. You could say we all want to do our best. That's what all we can do. But everybody's pattern, I got things wrong. You know, we're always going to know that we could have done it better, but if we knew, but at the time, it's, you know, who is perfect? Probably lose my temper. You know, I mean, how can you be calm, reasoned, fun, engaging, a good cook and career person all at once, all the time? You cannot. And I think it's okay to not be.
Yeah, and a good relationship will support you in those times as well, won't they, when you're being boring or shouting.
Annoying.
Whatever else, yeah. I'm really struck by what you said before about, you know, the idea of failure comes from the fact that you'd set this goal to stay married. Well, let's challenge that as an assumption then. If we know the stats, 42% of marriages end in divorce, is it a realistic goal then to think that you're going into a marriage and it's going to last forever if the stats say 42% of the time that's not going to happen? Is it our goals we need to challenge?
Well, what's interesting is that at that time of inception, conception, whatever, or being in love, you don't have rational thought. Hence not eating momentarily. I just think that it's an ability, human beings have an ability to connect that is without rationale. And I think that if you, in a lifetime, if you look back, you go, well, how many times have we, in quotes, been in love? Maybe there are about three or four people that you could have had that, you know, connection with in a lifetime, maybe more now, obviously. But so at that time, you jump in because there's other stuff going on, like your chemicals and your, you know, you can meet someone and go, okay, I really like you, but actually I don't want to have a child with you, if that's a measure, or I don't like you at all and I really never want to see you again, you know. But all of us have got the capacity for happiness. It's just that happiness doesn't last necessarily. Okay. But we've all got the capacity.
Happiness is a strategy state, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's when we jump in and we have our hopes. And a lot of us seem to want to get married or live together. That seems to be quite usual. And gosh, if having those feelings are free and so powerful and intense, I can understand why we all want them. It's great when it's going well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Was it lonely when you were divorced, Helen? Did you feel a sense of loneliness?
Yeah, I think because at the time at the school, I mean, it was very different times, and I know there were comedies and things are written about it now, but I think I was probably one of the few single parents at the school.
Right.
When I didn't go every day to pick her up if I was working, and I remember there was one couple, they actually asked me round for supper and they didn't mind that I didn't have someone. And I was thinking, oh, that's quite modern. You're made to feel that you're not part of a community, but maybe that's different now. But in those days, and then with the parents' day, you had to, you know, steel yourself to connect. And you go, everyone knows we're divorced. We're now talking to the form teacher. You know, there's kind of a stigma. You just had to be strong about it. And at one element, you would feel, oh, I'm not a couple. Whereas because the majority of the society that I was in at that time probably was a couple.
So the loneliness came from feeling different and out on a limb, you mean socially as much as anything else?
think so. In the and then you think that you should be doing everything together as a unit, like, you know, you'd go out in the park and you go, oh my god, this day. Well, I'd be with my school friend, but you know, you that thing where you see everyone else seems to be a couple. And it is so unfortunate that because a thing happened that you no longer remain with that individual person at that time, the layering is that you then feel in some that inferior. You just go, you're doing it differently, but you still love your child. Everyone still loves each other with the child. It's just you've got to crack on in a different way and you get over it. There's the joy.
Yes. Do you think there's a timeline for getting over it? Because I know lots of people listening to the podcast, maybe you're in the midst of it and it feels pretty dark. And, you know, when you're in there, you can't see sometimes the light at the end of the tunnel. You can't see when it's going to get better. Do you think there is a point in time? And is that a numerical point in time, or does something happen where you do wake up at some point and feel, okay, I can cope with this. This is okay. I'm actually feeling happy.
I think it doesn't, that kind of intense heartache or whatever doesn't last. It just can't. My thing would be 4 years. I think proper 4 years for getting over max for a love affair. That's my statistic. That's before I got married. That's like when I was younger. I would say that took me 4 years. Had one. But then I would always, this would be my trick to my daughter when she was at university. I'd say, look, get off with someone else. That was always my cure. It was an amazing cure. Maybe not. Yes. I think, but it's like, you know, get another hobby. You know, if something's been taken away from you, then replace it. And then even though that isn't going to be a replacement, that you get back on the horse.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually, you can call it rebound. I think being active is really important.
Habit, isn't it? It's getting the habit going again, the habit of being in a relationship.
Yeah. And not asking so much from it, but just being active, because people are really interesting. And I like being on my own a fair amount, but the joy of just being with other people and having a laugh and connecting and comparing notes is everything. So I think you have to kind of give yourself a chance to get out there and connect and compare notes, and then you don't feel so lonely.
And when you met your now husband, did you know at the time that this was going to be one that lasted, or
no?
Was it just somebody to get off with? I've said that.
The proximity, yes, one is reliant on proximity to even make a decision to get off with someone. A few weeks before, I'd been on one of those mind and body weekend courses where you meet a lot of people who come from other countries, and it's a good way to meet people. But it had, for 2 days, I'd done the kind of mind and body stuff where you have to get into pairs and you have to do all these things, and being like, you know, at drama school, you do that. And then I had got into the habit of not looking at people in the eye. I'd become a bit shut off. So the combination of me doing this, like, whoa, sort of slightly woo-woo course, which was great. You know, you do a bit of singing and dancing and getting into pairs. And then going on, it wasn't a blind date, but going out of my comfort zone with another school friend, and Chris was in that group. And I didn't want to go, and I was busy, and I was thinking, oh, why am I here? Why am I going to this market town to do? Why? And then that's why it was all set up. Things were aligned when I say set up, in that then I thought, oh, you're interesting. Oh, I better behave. Oh, that's a surprise. So it's a combination of me giving something a chance and actually just physically and mentally meeting someone where there was a connection. And then we got married 6 months later, which, it sounds like I'm boasting, and I'm not. It's just that I think it's important for people to know that things can happen. They just can, because life is full of things happening.
It wasn't just a random chance thing. You'd gone through a bit of a process by the sounds of it.
I had.
Getting yourself in the right mental place.
I had.
And then you like to say, certain things have to happen. There had to be a physical attraction. You had to be going to a party, that kind of stuff.
But yes.
There'd been all the work in the background. What are those tips then? So if people are in that position now, What are your best tips for getting back on the horse?
Okay, what I would say, because a really important counterpoint to me doing that funny woo-woo course was actually accepting, and I know this sounds corny, but I wasn't going to get married again. And that thing where they say marriage at first sight, the chap's going, you are enough. But honestly, accepting that you are enough, that you can do it. I literally said that night to my friends, Christy, in the garden before we went to the event, I said, I will not get married again. It's Hannah and me. I get that now. And I wasn't thrilled about it, but I wasn't fighting it. And so it's, and honestly, surrendering that, I mean, you can't fake this. You have to somehow genuinely surrender all that. And then you're not hungry and you're not desperate and you're not looking, but you're still cool enough to jump in. So it was a combination of doing my workshop and then accepting that I wasn't going to just stop looking, just stop and accept, and then being a bit bold, because I think I probably, our fear of rejection is so huge that we get into the habit of not taking the initiative because we think rejection is the worst thing. But being rejected a few times in relationships that don't matter too much is quite a good grounding, because then you go, oh, it's not the worst thing. Because I got chucked by someone before when I was a single parent on the phone, and the person just said, oh, yes, I don't want a relationship with you. And I went, no, of course not. No, of course. And then, why would you? And then I went to the fridge and had some wine, and it took me 2 weeks. And then I was very grateful for having had that interlude.
Yeah.
So rejection is all right. It toughens you up.
Yeah. And there's a lot in this journey, isn't there? Like, if you just write it down on a bit of paper, it looks like a very neat progression. You know, you have a relationship, it doesn't work, you've got your child, you move on, you have the next one. But there's so much goes on in that period, like you say, that self-awareness, the self-development, the knocks, the physically having to date when it's really difficult, the rejection, the letting go of you know, things that you've clung on to for like a long time in order to get yourself to where you are. And all of that has to happen before then
you're
in a position where you can find somebody to be in a relationship with where you can be yourself.
It's a lot. But Kate, maybe just accepting for less than perfect's okay as well, if that's what you want, and being okay with yourself. But what used to hold me back was just, because I'm quite intense, was just fear of rejection. Or if you can tackle that one, then you can actually get out and about and engage quite acceptably. Just what is the worst that can happen? Or somebody just at that point in their life, they just don't want to, you know, get crack on with you. Well, fine. There'll be somebody else who does. But your shopping list, we need a shopping list of how to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but it's interesting listening to the reflections of somebody who's away from it, because a lot of the time when we talk about divorce and separation, we're talking when we're in the thrust of it, and that colours our view of it, and it colours how we see it and how we think about it. But actually, what's been so fascinating about this conversation is that it's been so interesting to hear what happens after the process of time has happened, and how that mellows your view, how it enables you to reflect, and how it gives you some perspective on what's been a tricky time in your life. You sort of lose the drama, and you get the underneath bit. You don't get the initial crunch. You get the mellow middle.
You do get the mellow middle. And as I said, my hope when it was painful was to be neutral. And that's a sort of artificial construct. I don't need that. You just see people for what they are. And it's turned out in the way it's turned out. And probably the two of our personalities wouldn't have survived, in fact, but we didn't know that. So I think the inevitable happened. And yes, it's painful, but I don't think it could have worked out any differently. So that's quite useful.
I could talk about it all afternoon, but sadly we're at the end of time. Helen, I can't thank you enough for sharing those reflections.
Thank you for your questions. I think they're really helpful questions, making me think.
Really interesting. Thank you. What are you up to, and where can people find out about you, Helen?
Well, I founded the Comedy Women in Print Prize, Quip, which people can find on the internet to encourage witty women's writing, something I'm quite passionate about. And and writing my memoir and hopefully getting out and doing some slightly jolly gigs, like as an old person, and maybe even doing a bit of cabaret. You know, just if I can get myself a bit fit, Kate, I might be able to sort of waddle onto a stage and do a little bit. That's what I want now. Finish the memoir and get out and doing some gigs and carry on nurturing witty women's writing.
Sounds fantastic, Helen. Thank you very much. You can find out more about this podcast at thedivorcepodcast.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Kate_Daly as well, if you want to find out when the next episode will be sent through. Thanks ever so much for your time, Helen, and thank you all for listening.